Welcome to MGO Radio 4.2 live at the Bow Store on Main Street. I am Brian Cook. This is Seth Fisher.
How you doing?
Well, it was a less depressing week.
Yeah. We should we should just maul horses every week.
I kind of feel like Michigan should drop down to 1AA and just wreck some stuff for a few years and then come back up.
Is that a...
purify some stuff?
Is that your new format for NCAA? Is that the segue to...
Pro-rel? No,
yeah.
I'm not a pro-rel person. Okay. Pro-rel people are silly, mostly, for soccer, you know.
Right.
Although the NBA should do it. You could put 10 more NBA franchises in there, do some promotion and relegation, it'd be awesome.
We'll have a Pistons guy on here soon. We'll talk about it then.
I don't know if the Pistons guy is going to want to get relegated. Because that's...
No, they're perfect for it, because they're like always right at that bottom level playoff. Yeah.
Anyway, Michigan takes on Central... Smothered,
Western,
moving good,
Southwestern,
Southern Methodist University this weekend.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the directional Michigan team we just played.
No, I was. I'm
getting horses confused again.
So I was gonna say Western Michigan, but I was gonna say Southern Methodist, and so between those two, I got Central,
South Central Michigan.
Because if you average out Western and Southern, you get Central in my mind.
That's like a team in some sort of fantastic movie where they need a really bad football team.
Speaking of, that's our gimmicky top five, is real universities that sound fake. But that's for a later portion of the show. This is where we talk about kind of our final thoughts on the previous week's game, elucidated from the UFR that I have done. I have put all of it into my brain.
Okay.
Peck away.
I did get to read the offense part, and the only part I cared about was the offensive tackles, of course.
Right.
The new ones.
And Michigan didn't even want to put more than, I think, two or three snaps where there was like a legitimate chance at a pass rush on the field against Western Michigan. Which is a little bit...
They are a very blitzy team, and this week is a little, actually a lot softer.
Sure.
If you're going to start with it. But, yeah, they...
They blocked him. I only had one pass protection for an actual member of the offensive line, and that was Bredesen.
Right.
On the kind of spin through where he got hit, and McKeon couldn't catch the ball. So the three opportunities they did have to actually legitimately pass block, they did.
Right.
But I think the lack of opportunities says more than the success and the limited opportunities that were provided.
There was some good pass blocking on the one long throw to Collins, yeah.
On the one throw.
Well, all right, so I remember last year during that like Rutgers, Maryland, Minnesota stretch, they did kind of the same thing when they were kind of very slowly, gingerly working Peters in.
It wasn't quite as pronounced.
Yeah.
So, like, even though, I mean, you should have Mason Cole at left tackle, so you had that question mark at right tackle, and then you had all the organizational issues last year.
Right.
But, like, they would often, like, max pro and then try to hit, like, one or two guys in a route, and they weren't even, like, thinking about that against Western. So that's, like, gives you the jeebies a little bit.
Well, my recollection of those games was that when they did try to pass block, it went so terribly. They, like, okay, that was the drive where we're going to do it, and we're just not even going to...
Because
there was like, okay, we'll try it one time. Susie Ruiz has like a magnificent bust and gets Peters sacked very hard. And
that did happen.
You're right. And then afterwards, they're like, no, let's just roll these guys and move on to the next week.
Well, and they had that luxury. And they had the luxury against Western Michigan as well because the ground game was really working. I didn't think that it was like a quantum leap forward for the run blocking, which has been good since about midway through last year. The grades actually came out a little bit worse than Notre Dame, and it's just tough because I'm not giving many positives on like a 67-yard touchdown run because Western Michigan has decided that they're just not even going to contest it.
Right.
It's like, nah, we don't want to. We don't feel like we're going to do it on the next drive, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's how, I mean, Western Michigan was always going to be that game where there isn't a lot of positives to gain because they're going to screw up and you just have to kind of use what they give you.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we saw. There was a little bit of the tactical wrinkle. They were running a lot of down G. which you posted on the site, and I posted about it on the site, and it, we I think we've thoroughly
explained the whole
it.
Michigan fan base is now all over Down G.
We never talk like technical stuff on WTKA, but Sam was like, yeah, why don't you explain that on the radio? And I was like, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, second week in a row, he read neck sharpies and like led off with that. He's like, okay, what? Tell me about this thing that you kind of have to draw up so people understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, but so we won't go through the details if you're interested. It's on the site. But it is something that it's nice to see being incorporated in the offense because it fits well with both, you know, power offense and inside zone. It's kind of a variant of both that allows you to show certain parts of the defense one thing when you're running something else. It's not a mind blower. It's not something that's going to be, you know, six touchdown runs a game. But I think you're going to see it pretty consistently going forward as part of a run offense that has a lot of stuff that kind of looks like something else.
Yeah, and it's a nice thing to have because it messes with some of the keys that that they're using. So if you're a team that's going to, you have to run two things. You can't just be like a power team. You have to be a power in something else.
Right.
And you're going to have, you know, they wanted, I think, at one point to be an outside zone plus power team, and that was just not happening. And they're kind of now more
really
of an not this year, a couple of years ago. Yeah. And now, I mean, and like, you know, the Greg Frey, like all that. That was
so everybody runs an attempt to be everybody that. Runs inside zone.
Right.
There's no team in college football that does not run inside zone.
Right.
And then you can either tack on outside zone, so you have the David Mulks on your roster, or you can tack on power, where you've in Michigan is much more of a power line.
Right. But I want my point is this is kind of an this is a little bit outside zone. The backside is not inside zone. The backside's outside zone. Because they're sliding, you're asking that center to reach a guy, and you're not blocking the backside end.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay. That was.
I mean, there's a lot of inside zone these days where you don't block the backside end.
Because because you're just like guys used to being read.
Right. So, yeah. And the kind of like bucket steps and widening out that you see, we're getting into the weeds here.
Very. So it's an extremely visual podcast.
I don't know if I agree with that, but
so there's not much else to talk about with Western, especially on offense.
Well,
like
there were a couple more things.
Patterson had some great throws. Again.
Right, so Patterson is able to roll out despite the fact that Western Michigan is very, very prepared for all the waggles Michigan's running.
Right.
And they get in his grill pretty frequently, and he's able to get around them, except the one time, and then uncork some passes that didn't really seem at all likely before he uncorked them. So you have the shot to Martin down the sideline, you have the shot to DPJ down the sideline. Both of those are DO throws, and he had, I think, three of those and 13 chartered opportunities.
Right.
And he had like four plus throws, which means that you were dealing with pressure and a couple of them were the same play. But that's good output from him. And his mistakes were pretty minor. Like he throws it behind Oliver Martin. He throws it a little bit too high for Grant Perry.
He throws the tougher one to DPJ for a touchdown instead of the wide open crossing.
That's not a problem.
We're getting. I'm saying that we're already getting to that level when you go through his mistakes. Like but once you're at number five, it's
if you look at his history, like when he's able to get a reasonable amount of protection, he does feel like that five-star quarterback. And that's kind of the big question for Michigan going forward: is like, can they continue having him feel like that instead of the guy who's just running for his life constantly?
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to project what he's going to be like against a really good defense, and
I
if
no
you
idea.
Can, yeah, the touchdown to DPJ was I brought that up because that's one of those throws that there's it beats almost any coverage.
Yeah, there's you lose if he makes that throw, you lose.
Yeah,
and the reason that you lose is because it's the toughest throw to make, so you're just kind of letting him have it if he can take it. So to see him hit it and so calmly. Like, he did have a wide-open slant for a touchdown, too, but he's like, nah.
And Jake McCurry, I got to give him a shout-out. His family asked for a shout-out, actually.
Really?
Yep. Congratulations, Jake McCurry, on your touchdown. It was a...
Makes me feel deeply uncomfortable.
It was a...
I will say that I, you know, he had this media appearance this week, and he's talking about what he's doing. He's like, yeah, I knew I needed to stack him a little bit, and then I broke out, and it was a lot easier against that guy than Michigan safeties. But, you know, he's a guy who got brought up as someone who was making plays against Michigan safeties. He's in the right spot on an offense to be that kind of walk-on. Like, he's a walk-on who walks on the field, and you're like, that is definitely a walk-on.
Right.
In a way that, like, Nate Shanley is not. Because Nate Shanley is 6'2". It's like, okay, that guy...
And an athlete. Shanley is going to be running down the field at the same speed as everyone else on that sprint they do for the...
Right. And McCurry is... He's a small guy. But if you're a slot receiver and you have those dealio things, you can get some playing time. And that was a pretty good route. Dodged the guy. Good start. The other kind of walk-on that we saw was True Wilson. And Wilson was a little bit similar. Like, he walks out there, and you're like, you are listed at the same weight as Caron Higdon on the roster. And that cannot possibly be true.
Yeah.
But he
had, did the thing that we expected him to be doing. Everything about him said he was a pass blocker. And
right. And we have the one snap where I'm
wrapping that up beautifully because I haven't seen one of those great blocks since Vincent Smith.
You get the cup block where the guy falls on his head, and you've done a good job.
Right.
And then as a runner, he looked like he was aware of where his cuts were going to be. He made them well. He got outside on his, I think, final snap that I charted. Not this final snap, but the final one I charted where he did a really good job of threatening outside and then cutting at the last second right off his blocker's butt. And that's what I like to see. So you know, I think there was some like kind of consternation about, oh, this guy's the third string running back. That means the other running backs aren't very good. And I do think that maybe they have some things to work on, especially in pass protection. But I thought our first glimpse at True Wilson was pretty reassuring.
I have no problem with a walk-on third string running back when you have the running backs showed how good they are in that game too. Like, you have two alpha guys. The rest of the guys can be practicing things, and you can have somebody who's taking those shots as a third down back, and that's fine. I want to talk about the guy whose butt he was cutting off of.
That wasn't... I think that was a receiver at that point.
I'm specifically talking about James Hudson.
Okay, yeah, that was...
James Hudson caved the side of that line. And
he did.
At several plays in a row.
He whooped up on some Mac backups.
Which is what you... I mean, that's the only people he's been allowed to block so far.
It's true.
Yes.
I'm down for some James Hudson snaps in this game early in this game. I just think that is a caveat that you need to throw out there. The other thing is I thought Joel Honigford looked very good himself. And, you know, degree of difficulty caveats do apply. But, you know, Honigford is a guy that nobody has said really very much about. So when I was doing the season preview, there was like one thing from Harbaugh where he mentioned that both Honigford and Stuber were big boys. And that was about it. And, you know, that's not alarming for a redshirt freshman offensive lineman, but you do, you know, kind of want to hear someone talk about.
Right. And he was a guy who moved inside to guard, which was expected, but not a, you know, that you, given the dearth of tackles, you were
right. And if he's playing guard and there's like, we don't have any tackles, like, that's not a great sign. I feel like if he had done this against Michigan's backups in the spring game, you have an entire offseason where people are kind of like, oh, that guy might be something. So that's good. I mean, Michigan had six offensive linemen in that class, and they've already lost a couple. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to have a repeat of, you know, the Brady Hoke 6 OL class, which was a complete disaster.
We don't have to go there, and I don't think we're going to go there.
I think that, you know, getting that kind of performance, even in a limited amount of snaps against bad players, for Joel Honigford is a good sign.
I was more looking at the tackles just because when I was previewing Western, their defensive tackles are so bad that, like, anything that happened against them.
Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that.
I'm sorry, but they're...
I want to hear that they are solid MAC players with a lot of pride.
Their ends are solid MAC players with a lot of pride.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, so Ali Fayed was a guy that stood out to me because he's gotten, like, no hype whatsoever. And I looked around to see if anyone's looked at that guy before because he was the one making plays when I watched the tape of him, and I thought he looked good against Michigan, too. That was the guy that Hudson caved.
All right.
So I was impressed by that. And the other guy is the Don Brown recruit. Don Brown was recruiting him to BC before he and then he switched out of BC's class when Brown left.
Oh, well.
And ended up at WMU. So the ends were, I mean, they're not the ends that we're going to see later this year.
I knew this was going to happen, so I like
Bosa and
like,
Gaz.
I have to chart this. I know that this is not, but I know that if I don't do it, people are going to be furious. And this is the thing that you are asking about.
Yeah.
You're asking about the last, like, four plays of a 49-3 game against the Mac.
Because those four plays are our future.
Yeah.
Unless you believe we're going to be running Runyon and JBB out against the Gaz. then that's where we're going to be.
Well, I think that about sums it up for the offense. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco, to St. Louis, to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.2 live at the Bow Store on Main Street. We would like to thank our sponsors at this juncture. Those, of course, are Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummus, and the Ann Arbor District Library.
Those are nice sponsors. Speaking of one of those sponsors, Lantana.
Oh, we're going to do this in the other segment.
Oh, we can do that in the other segment.
We need to pad it out.
That's right.
Well, this is going to be a long segment-ish.
Oh, this is the Western Michigan offense versus our defense?
Well, yeah.
This is a long segment.
We had a breakout player, man.
We did. You know, I haven't read your UFR yet. I haven't gotten around to it.
Well.
So I'm coming from...
That's just great, Seth.
I'm spanking new on this one. I have no idea what happened.
So... you have some idea what happened, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm yes. Well,
so Carlo Kemp is the person being referenced.
Right.
Carlo Kemp came out with a plus 7.5, which is not superstar, but for defensive tackle in his first game against anybody, highly encouraging.
Especially given the week before when we were all nervous about...
And he's also like pretty clearly outperforming Brian Monet, who's sitting right next to him. So... there is definitely a degree of difficulty thing with the MAC teams, but we're talking about like internal to Michigan's roster. We saw Monet be there, functional, against Notre Dame, and Kemp got a few snaps, got like a minus one on one of them. In this game, Kemp was consistently active. He was consistently getting penetration, and he wasn't particularly controllable by Western Michigan, which was not the case for both Monet and Mike Bonfour. So kind of the thing that stood out to me was, so Rashawn Gary's sack, and he goes speed to power, and he gets in there and he sacks, but Wasink wanted to move up in the pocket. And he couldn't move up in the pocket because of Carlo Kemp.
Which was the exact issue we were talking about after Notre Dame.
Right, so he gets penetration, he spins off of it, and he's pushed the other offensive lineman back so far that there's no gap. And we saw an almost identical play, I think, on the next drive, where I think it was Chase Winovich this time. I don't remember who exactly it was, but someone gets around the corner, quarterback flushes, and it's Mike Dwumfor this time. And Dwumfor has gotten a little penetration. He's doing a decent job of stapling the pocket close, and he gets held in a relevant and somewhat flagrant way. Caveats aside, Kemp wasn't in a position where the offensive lineman could hold him because he had more decisively won that matchup. And, you know, when Dwumfor is there and he's doing an okay job and the quarterback still escapes the pocket, because he's being held, I'm not going to neg that, but it did kind of stand out as like, okay, Kemp was just playing this exact same role and did it better. So I don't know what was with the depth chart in the opener. A little bit weird to me because if Kemp looks better than Michigan's other defensive tackles, why is he only getting a few snaps against Notre Dame? But yeah. I will definitely take it because that three-tech spot looked like a major potential issue. You have Lawrence Marshall sit out this game. You have Aubrey Solomon sit out this game. You have...
And that caused
question
kind of a
marks.
That was kind of a moment of concern, right, when all of us, like, we found out within 24 hours before the game that Aubrey's out, Marshall's out. We've already kind of gotten down on Dwumfor after Notre Dame, and then we're like, well, who's next?
And you know, Dwumfor actually had a fairly solid game. He made a nice play on a pin and pull where he used that explosion that we've heard about for 2 years now to like penetrate and pick off a puller and blow that play up. So he made a couple of plays in there. But
this was also a good for Mac offensive line. Like, the center is going to get drafted, and the guards are okay, even though they're a little small. Like, this is not just, like, throwing around Mac players.
That's good, useful knowledge. It's not like the defensive tackles, which
right,
we're trying to ignore. So, I mean, you get some weird personnel decisions early in the year, and that's what I hope this is. And that, you know, pretty much the main thing I'm going to be looking for in this game is if Kemp can replicate his performance. And given the SMU offensive line, they're all very small people.
Right.
Relative. They're like a 1980-sized offensive line. He should be able to. And then transfer into the Nebraska game. And if he can do it there, then I think you have a three-tech starter and a decent one. Maybe a good one.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to come up against a line like Notre Dame's again until Wisconsin. And
yes, but we will get some lines that are better than the MAC lines that we're going to see
we're
this
gonna,
week and next week.
The worst line we're going to face is this week. Nebraska's line last year was bad, but I think they have okay players.
But they still have some,
they
managed to really rush for a ton of yards against Colorado, so that'll be a test.
Yeah,
And that'll be kind of like put up or shut up for like the Carlo Kemp being a thing this year.
Yeah.
Dwumfor, I think, is not going to be a thing this year. You don't want to ever write off an underclass defensive tackle, but you know it's going to be a process for him to mow Hurst up. And I think, you know, last week I said 80% of the hype can be thrown in the garbage. Holden Study at 80% didn't get worse, didn't get
better.
Did
he have that first step? Because I thought I saw it, but again, I haven't read the UFR. But
flashes. You know,
okay.
Not consistent.
So there is still a first step that they can mold into a player in there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should write off Mike
Dwumfor. Especially Greg Madison has turned those guys into...
Right.
Yeah.
But the brakes should be fully pumped at this point.
Okay.
You know, the other guys on the defensive line, I thought Quiddy Pie had a good... Quiddy Pay. It's okay.
Fine.
Ace isn't here. So I don't have that. Quiddy Pay had a couple of impressive plays on the ground as well. Mm-hmm. And he got targeted a little bit because, you know, he comes in and the other guys were Sean Gary. And it's like, all right, where are you going to go at that one? So he had a couple opportunities to show what he can do. And I thought he did pretty well. So I think he's tracking towards being a player next year who can step in for one of the departed defensive ends and play well. Hutchinson had a couple of bad plays and, you know, looks like a freshman from time to time, but he should get a lot better in year two. Linebacker level, Josh Ross.
Yeah.
Josh Ross had two sticks in this game that were eye-opening. One, he comes underneath a blocker, and he still got that blocker, and he stops a running back dead in his tracks. And two was his ability to redirect on that play I was talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
where the quarterback escaped between Dwumfor and defensive end. I can't remember. And he was able to redirect and hold that down to a minimal amount of yards. And maybe a little bit more importantly, when he hit the quarterback, it was like an, ooh, oh, that probably hurt kind of moment.
Are you throwing out as opposed to Devin Gill flinging off a quarterback?
I thought that was kind of an announcement. Like, yes, I am fast. Yes, when I hit people at full speed, it is more momentum than many people at full speed.
I don't know what this came out in the UFR, but I remember a play when he outflanked Bush, where Bush was kind of trying to get to the edge, and all of a sudden there's Ross there first.
That was, well, I mean, Bush was attacking the guy after he got bounced out and made him bend, but didn't actually get a tackle attempt in, and then Ross was able to make up that distance and finish the play.
That was my, like, Josh Ross moment. I was like, whoa, where'd that guy come from? And made the – oh, cool. I like this guy.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. That was definitely a clip. And with Gil having kind of a quiet day, and I thought he had one missed assignment, you know, I feel like he did a little bit better against Notre Dame. This was, like, a Josh Ross blowout for that battle. And we're going to see them rotate definitely this week, I'd imagine. But going to that Nebraska game, I kind of feel like Josh Ross is just going to win that weak side job, and that's a good thing.
I'm from what I've seen of Josh Ross so far, I'm pretty excited about the rest of his career right now.
Not really a whole lot else in that department except for Noah Furbush being able to, like, look up a receiver and completely dominate his route, and then he was fortunate enough that the quarterback threw the ball right to him. But that was another instance of good coverage. You know, I complained about Furbush being sent downfield against Notre Dame. And then I do the UFR, and I'm like, oh, he's actually in a really good position, and they just got beat by a perfect throw. So,
yeah, I have a pretty hot take that's of this one. That was Watson was the best cornerback out there.
I don't know.
That was
– I mean, in the grading –
again, from the stands.
In the grading, it was David Long, but, you know –
so Demarest and I had really good seats, and we were, like, right down low, and we were, like, fourth row. So we got to watch some of the cornerback versus receiver battles from the side that the refs don't get to see.
Yeah.
And Long was doing a lot more tugging.
Yeah, but...
than but
Rubin's racing, man.
I've watched football before. I'm sure that happens all the time. But we got to see maybe two plays later Watson on the same route covering it, and he was just in the guy's chest.
I think I clipped that one too because he had kind of the Brandon Watson vintage.
Swatson.
You're in the sideline now. Please enjoy your trip. So, I mean, I don't think that's a crazy take. I did mention that I felt like Hill had come back to the pack a little bit and that I didn't think that there was a clear. Like, last year, Hill was the number one cornerback.
Yeah.
And this year, it kind of feels like any one of the three guys could make that claim. So, I mean, it's a little bit disappointing because you want Hill to, like, maintain or maybe even get a little bit better. But I think you're looking at the cornerbacks and you're like, this is an A, not an A+. So,
yeah, is A going to return for a plus season? Because
we'll see. We'll see. I think maybe the missed practice time has hurt a little bit, and if you are in the swing of the season and you're practicing consistently, maybe you can get that rhythm back.
Yeah, I was wondering if he maybe just has like a little ankle or something like that going on.
Well, he's obviously not sitting out for no reason, right?
Yeah. So
that's also a definite possibility. But yeah, I mean, and there's not really much to say about the secondary.
Yeah, you're that NFL. Don't draft him. He's a risk.
Well, the other
stay off.
There was one other thing is that Michigan was rotating in Hawkins pretty frequently. Like, they pulled Metellus after the personal foul, And a couple people have tried to tell me that they thought it was legitimately on Hudson. I do not believe that. I believe it was actually on Josh Metellus.
It was. It was just a play in the course of a game, and those happen every game.
You know, they announced it as Hudson.
As Hudson. Yeah. We were on that sideline. We were right there, so that was like right in front of us. It was definitely Metellus. And it was definitely like he stepped out, and he was still kind of, I'm going to get a hit on the quarterback mode at that moment.
But, I mean, they brought in Hawkins, and you know, for a drive that's like, you did a bad thing. But then they kept kind of rotating him in, and it felt like they were pretty comfortable having him out there. So that's, you know, a good sign for his future and his present.
Yeah, I'm on board with Hawkins anyway. I think that, like, you get that guy rotations, and he's – Metellus is the starter, that's fine, but Hawkins seems to have a lot more athleticism, and I can't, you know.
I don't know if I agree with that, because I will say that – So they tried a bunch of bombs in this game.
Mm-hmm.
None of them came off. You know, a couple of them were at Dwayne Eskridge, who Western Michigan claims runs a 4.33, which
he's fast. He's not.
I mean, he's a 5'9" outside receiver.
Anything sub 4.4 is fake.
So I believe that he's a pretty fast guy.
Yeah.
And on two of those bombs, Metellus was able to get over the top and actually get a hit in. On a ball, the ball that Watson almost intercepted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that was a throw exactly on point, Watson is beat by that ball. And Metellus very likely plays the hero by breaking it up just as the ball gets there. That's really impressive when you're coming from a center field position. Later in the game, this ball wasn't nearly as well thrown, and it was a little bit quicker out of the gate. But it really felt like Hawkins had done the same thing, which is get over the top of Dwayne Eskridge on a fly route. So I thought those were good plays for both guys. I thought the safeties were, in general, very good, except for Cannell, who I didn't see on the screen the whole time.
which is
fine. fine. Which is wonderful.
Yeah. We walked in with his parents, weirdly, or his family and his girlfriend, and I was trying not to make my Cannell comment, which is like, you know, chill out, be boring.
Well, he's been boring.
But he's
so
been, yeah,
through two games, I have him for 0.5 plus. And no minuses.
That's lovely.
That's like the epitome of an incredibly boring season. So far, so good in that department.
The Brandon Engelman 0+1 season.
Now that, you know, you get Metellus out there, you get Hawkins out there, and you're thinking maybe these guys could be interesting, but like in a good way. And then you think, no, that's not our goal. That is never our goal. Our goal is to be boring.
All right, speaking of boring, do we have anything else to talk about with the defense?
You're not supposed to trash talk the podcast when you're literally on it. You are so pleased with yourself.
You're supposed to be nicer to me. You know this now.
Just because some commenter said I should be nicer to you doesn't mean that commenter is correct.
Well,
I'm beginning to think I have been too nice.
All right, Bo.
Well, what is it? When your team is winning, be ready to be tough, because winning can make you soft.
So I'm winning.
All right, that's it. This segment's over. Coming back with a gimmicky top five for the ages, but aren't they all?
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing. PPC SEO. Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let human elements show you how.
Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Like podcasts that aren't about sports? Maybe ones about music or movies or books or Ann Arbor history? Then hoo boy, do we have news for you. The Ann Arbor District Library offers podcasts about all these topics and more on aadl.org or for streaming on your favorite podcast app. Visit aadl.org/podcasts to check out shows like Undercovers with Martin Bandek, interviews with music and pop culture authors, or the Michigan Theaters podcast, Behind the Marquee. There's the comic book podcast Super Skull, produced by the crew at Vault of Midnight, and the Ann Arbor history podcast Ann Arbor Stories. Or check out AADL's newest podcast, Presenting Alfred Hitchcock Presents, an episode-by-episode dive into Hitchcock's popular anthology TV series. If you like podcasts, AADL has you covered. Check out aadl.org/podcasts and find your next favorite podcast today.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio at the Bow Store. This is 4.2. We're on Main Street. We're at the Bow Store. That's how we do it.
333 South Main.
Is it really 333?
Yeah.
It's like half the mark of the beast. Is that not?
That's, I'm sure, the rest of the reference they were going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like we're
half the beast.
Halfway between heaven and hell. That sounds like a Guns N' Roses lyric. Anyway.
Should we talk about hummus?
Sure, let's talk about hummus.
You can shut me down last time, and I love talking about this hummus.
All right, we'll talk about... Well, you had your story about the hummus, which was... It's a great story.
It is a great story. I don't have a story about stopping by their headquarters, because I walked right by it and then didn't go in.
Their headquarters?
Yeah. It's in Austin on, like, not the main strip, but, like, the State Street.
There's probably a big line out the door, because they have so many delicious hummuses on tap. They have hummus on tap at the headquarters.
Oh, now I'm feeling even worse about this. It was like a cute little house, actually. It was like a house that was done up in a very neighborhood.
They have hummus on tap, and then you're surrounded by all the cats that aren't in the hummus.
The cats love it because they know it's the one place that they can go that has hummus that's not going to put them in the hummus.
Right. Yeah. So when you're a cat or a human that doesn't want to eat cats and hummus. Lantana hummus.
That's right. And stop by if you're in Austin. Don't be like me.
Available at Meijer's, Bush's, or your local grocer.
Look for the hummus with the striped lids.
And now for our gimmicky top five, which I have to admit, based on the fact that SMU played North Texas, the North Texas Mean Green in the opener, I've been thinking about unnecessary roughness all week.
I know. I think we've made the unnecessary roughness references on the blog at least five times this
and
week.
And it's not... North Texas is not actually the school in unnecessary roughness.
Isn't it Texas...
It is Texas State.
Which is also a school.
But it wasn't when unnecessary roughness came out.
Oh, they weren't.
So there was a school in Texas that rebranded as Texas State
because of unnecessary roughness.
No, because they're not the armadillos. I don't remember what they are.
They should be the armadillos because they're like
brown.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. But and the Mean Green actually wear the Texas State.
They do. They wear
uniforms.
They wear the Texas State uniform.
Like it's a modernized version of it, but you could definitely see going back to the 90s that that was the uniform.
Right, yeah. They definitely are the armadillos, except there was an armadillo activist group that made them change their name to the Mean Green, and they updated the uniforms.
I see. Do they have like a rivalry over who is actually the real school in that movie? Like
they
between
should.
These two schools?
They should have a little statue of Scott Bakula. That's like their rivalry trophy.
Doing the quantum leap motion.
This is the best idea. No. It's not quantum leap.
No, but Scott Bakula, you know, he does. Yeah, okay.
No.
Who's the actor who played the guy who catches the touchdown at the end, the small guy? I've watched this movie.
Stonehands?
Yeah. I don't remember.
I don't remember.
The guy who's like so nice that he makes like a very nice comment in the bar and that like increases the likelihood of a fight with Texas.
I think that that guy's kid is actually like a college wide receiver now.
Really?
I might have been making this up, but I thought I saw on Twitter that like his kid was a recruitable like wide receiver prospect. And I was like, no way.
Oh wow. That
well guy, then there was the guy who like did like karate at the opposition. This is a slightly problematic movie. It is. Yeah, we got Kathy Ireland is the kicker. But anyway, so it made me think of all the schools that sound like fake schools from movies.
Right.
So our gimmicky top five is the most fake sounding real schools.
Right.
Seth, you're number five.
Slippery Rock. Yes.
Does that sound fake?
Yeah.
That's too weird.
The whole point of it is that like Michigan fans are like, that cannot be a real school. That sounds like something out of a, you know, a comedy where, like a college comedy where the fraternity is, you know, getting away with things because they're just Slippery Rock in Pennsylvania. Slippery Rock.
It does feel like kind of like a bro comedy.
Yeah.
Like some guy with college on his wall likes this movie.
Right.
And there's like a plot point with a actual Slippery Rock and some nubile co-ed.
Right, like it's like the destination. Like you're going on, like road trip would end up at Slippery Rock.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Slippery Rock University.
My number five is Texas State, which is now a real school that is named after a fake school.
I was hoping that like it was a real school at the time, and like the writers of the movie just didn't look. They're just. Is there a Texas State? I mean, I don't know. Just call it Texas State.
The writers of the movie probably didn't look, but the lawyers did. Lawyers always look.
Right.
So, lawyers.
Even back then, did the lawyers have to look back then? Or could they just be like, yeah, if there's a school, they'll like the movie, and then we'll go down there. That's what they did with the Mustangs. That Ford went down and was like, oh, you guys have the Mustangs. Well, we're going to have a car called the Mustang. And they already kind of had introduced it in Detroit. But, like, the Mustangs, SMU thinks that, like, the car is named after them. And still to this day believe that.
Is that true?
Yeah.
It feels like that's not true.
It's. I read game notes for those FFF columns because I have to like get the rosters.
Seriously?
And there's some crazy stuff that people put in those game notes, and that's in their game notes. Right. Yeah. They're trying to be like, hey, man, we're Detroit.
So they, Mustang. They didn't say that we don't believe the story. They said that we believe the story.
Yes. All
right.
Yeah, they believe the Mustang car is named after the Mustang, and that's why they introduced the Mustang.
Well, it's probably named after the horse.
Yeah.
Make up a cool-sounding word and be like, yeah, that sounds cool.
They were building a muscle car in Detroit, and they named it after the horse because of horsepower. That's why it's called that. But SMU believes it's because of them because SMU was so important at that moment. Yeah.
All right, Seth, you're number four.
Florida International.
That's a good one.
Because there's a lot of Florida directionals, and no one would actually believe that you would have an international school in Florida.
Also, both Florida International and Florida Atlantic sound like the fake rivals in one of these movies. Like, oh, we hate Atlantic. Stupid Atlantics.
The internationals are like the super preppy kids.
Yeah.
They have like the great study abroad program.
And the Atlantics are like the put upon locals.
Right, the Jean Shorty.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. All right, my number four is the Troy Trojans.
Of Troy.
We're from Troy.
It's like one of the oldest blog jokes that just
still exists.
It's still in existence.
But like you're named as Troy, and you're calling yourselves the Trojans. That is the laziest thing I've ever heard of. And it would definitely be in like a C movie, or if there was a college in the stupid bus show that my son watches.
Okay.
Because it's Korean. And they obviously spent as little time as possible translating it to English.
Right.
So it's just the laziest thing in the world. It's called Tayo. If you have a two-year-old, do not put this on. I recommend Octonauts.
I like Octonauts.
Yeah, Octonauts is fine. Octonauts has a British polar bear in it. It's cool.
Yeah.
But don't put
We could
on,
do the Octonauts song for the end of every year of our bus, opponents.
Even if your son is obsessed with buses, it's not worth it.
SMU is really soft.
I don't want to sing the Octonauts song.
I'm done. I don't have
believe
anything
me,
to rhyme with soft right
me,
now for them.
Creature Report is just stuck in my head. Constantly.
We haven't watched that in years. We moved on to like watching Disney movies again and again and again now.
Yeah, that's not. So we're gonna be docked enough. Yeah. Anyway, so the Troy Trojans of Troy is just the like Japanese movie that was barely translated. School.
Right.
We're from Troy.
We're from Troy. What's our school name? Troy. What are we?
The Trojans. The people from Troy.
Right.
That's good. Here's a pat on the head.
The Michigan Michiganders.
Yeah. Utah Utes is actually fairly similar, but the Utes are actually like a tribe.
And the Fighting Illini.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, you know, hey, we're the fighting version of our school.
I know, but there's
They're actually real.
Yeah, there's like real people that they're honoring / not honoring.
I don't think they went to honor them when they named it.
Well.
They had the retro.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as we said, a little problematic.
Right.
All right, Seth, you're number three.
Oral Roberts.
Oral Roberts?
Yes. So imagine this is one of those schools that would not have a football team.
Sure.
It's just like...
Does it have a football team?
Do they?
I know Liberty does now, but I don't think Oral Roberts does.
I don't know, but I've always thought the name Oral Roberts was a hilarious hilarious name for school. And I just... I imagine one of those like movies about preppy kids that are having, you know, sexual exploits that they show to teenage girls.
Wait.
That
stop.
Takes place at Oral
stop.
Roberts.
Stop. Stop.
Yes.
I know this is live.
You're not getting...
So we can't delete this, but we just deleted it.
Okay.
We've deleted this part of the podcast. We're moving on to my number three, which is Northeastern.
Northeastern what?
It's just Northeastern. It's in Boston. They play in the Beanpot. Michigan also played them in the hockey tournament last year.
Oh, Northeast. That's fine. That is the Northeast.
No, because I know it's in the Northeast. But what it sounds like is like the off-brand Northwestern.
Yeah.
Where you set your movie at Northwestern, but you didn't want to pay the licensing fee, so now it's at Northeastern.
It's probably like the name of the college that Bart Simpson's going to end up at.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, where is he going? He's going to Northeastern.
Yeah, or like there's the Dilbert joke where like this guy went to Harford.
Right.
Northeastern sounds like the Harford version of Northwestern.
Like Sanford.
Yes. I went to Sanford. Oh, that's, wow.
All right. Oh, we're playing Sanford this week. That sounds like a big game.
Sanford is actually another good one, which isn't on my list. Is it on your list?
No, I took that one off for Oral Roberts.
There's a bonus. Sanford.
Sanford.
There you go.
We have to include that one next time.
It's Samford. It's M. It's Samford.
Samford?
Yeah, it's Samford.
Samford. Okay.
Because their logo is just like a bulldog, and it just says Sam, so it just looks like it's like a dog. It's not like a university. It's just a dog named Sam.
I feel like a lot of schools, if I don't know the mascot, I'm just guessing bulldog or wildcat.
Yeah. All right, Seth, you're number two.
Indiana Purdue. Like, it's just, all right, Indiana University, Purdue University.
Indianapolis.
Right.
Or Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
IUPUFW.
Right. So, it's just letters, because right. No one can actually say Indiana Purdue without sounding like you're talking about a rivalry.
Well, it's Indiana University, Purdue
University.
Indianapolis.
Like
IUPUI is the one in Indianapolis.
Right. So, IUPUI, yeah.
There's PFW, I think they don't have the U's in there. It's not IUPUFW. It's IPFW. Which is like, what does Indiana-Purdue mean? That's...
No, I, yeah, it's... First of all, you should not ever put two rivals' names. You can't have, like, Michigan, Ohio State University. Right. Like, imagine if they did that in Alabama.
That's more horrifying than whatever you were getting into on the last one.
No, could you imagine that they did that in Alabama?
Alabama Auburn University.
Right. Like Birmingham. How? Like half the school, half that state would just try to burn that school down.
It doesn't sound fake. It just sounds like
it's wrong. But like the
it
IU,
does sound
right.
Wrong.
But IUPI sounds like a PUI. Yeah, right. It's
it doesn't sound.
Yeah, just throw some letters out there, and then we'll have some letters on our nerds fraternity as well. And there you go.
My number two is Central State, which is a real HBCU in Ohio.
I guessed it was in Ohio. You know, Ohio has like a lot of cities named like Central, Equidistant, Mezzoville.
I don't.
Centerville, Ohio.
I do know Middletown, that apparently Ohio. There are a lot of houses in Ohio that don't have a bathroom on the main floor. I follow Ben Koo, who's like, he does awful announcing, and he's a native.
I follow him.
He moved back from San Francisco to Columbus, and he tweeted out, I'd forgotten this about Ohio, is that there are houses without bathrooms on the ground floor. And I was just like, what? For one, how? For two, how would I not know about this when I'm like, I mean... I've been online for so long and like so clearly opposed to Ohio for so long. Nobody informed me of this.
I mean, it's not something Ohioans like to bring up all the time. Like, hey, I invite you to my house, but we don't really have a bathroom on the main floor. You have to climb up the stairs. And
I have two bathrooms on the main floor.
You know what Ohio has? Ohio has the outstairs bathroom.
The what?
The outstairs bathroom. You can pee anywhere in Ohio.
I can't tell if you're... kidding or not. Is it just like a free pee zone?
Yeah.
That would explain a lot.
Yeah. Have you driven through Ohio? You've smelled it before. Obviously, you're familiar with the pee smell that like encompasses all of Ohio, except for parts of Toledo. Sorry.
I can't say I open the windows. But anyway, Central State is a real HBCU that literally seems like the university from like the Allstate Mayhem commercials.
Right.
Guess who graduated from Central State University?
The Blue Eagles?
Omarosa.
Oh. Really?
Yes.
That's the first time I think she's been brought up on this podcast.
Probably, yes. Also Hugh Douglas. So they have like a legitimate NFL star from Central State.
Oh, just I wonder.
It's probably
if
how
like,
I heard about it.
Yeah, I wonder if she like has tried to meet him before. Like, hey, you're right.
Let's.
Yeah.
What is with you and like the things?
No,
that
no,
we don't
no,
want
no.
Talk
that's
about.
Not something I want. All right, never mind. I was
Seth. Your number
good
one.
My number one, the Colorado School of Mines.
That doesn't sound fake at all.
Are you kidding?
It does. What
Colorado School of Mines?
The Florida School of Mines sounds fake, but when I think Colorado, I think mines. I was a resident of that state, I will have you know.
Okay.
And the mining stuff, there's like, you can go on like tours of all the mining they used to do.
I know. Well, I've stayed in Golden several times now.
Golden?
Yeah, Golden, Colorado, home of Colorado School of Mines. But well, It's a beautiful town.
It doesn't sound fake at all.
It does. Well, okay. If you don't know anything about Colorado, which I didn't the first time I heard their name, which I think Michigan State was playing them, and I heard in my head I heard Colorado School of Mimes. But anyway, this is not from a movie.
What
this is
kind
from a cartoon.
Of mime school has a football team?
The kind that Michigan State would play in their instead of Notre Dame because
there's not a mime school on the planet that has a sporting.
But if there was, Michigan State would play them in their non-conference schedule. Yes,
your number one is bad.
It sounds like some crazy cartoon, like a Nickelodeon cartoon version of it's the Colorado School of what are we doing here? Mines. I thought it was kind of, yeah.
Would you like to hear my number one?
Is it better than mine?
It is.
All right, let's hear it.
Nebraska! How's that strike you?
That's a real school.
It's not!
Wait, the Lincoln one or the Omaha one?
It doesn't matter, just the idea
Nebraska.
The idea of Nebraska is just like, that's not real.
I
have you been to Nebraska?
Yes.
Nebraska isn't real.
My dad's an agricultural consultant. I got to go to all sorts of places that have corn and all sorts of places. I didn't get to go to places that didn't have corn.
My dad is an agricultural consultant. I got to go.
I got to go on trips
to all
sometimes,
sorts of places.
To all sorts of places around the Midwest. I am very well traveled in places like Mesoequidistantville,
that
Ohio.
That might be the saddest sentence that's ever been spoken on this podcast. I got to go to lots of places with my agricultural consultant father. Not that your father isn't a lovely human being. It's just
he was a very lovely man. And now that is the saddest thing we've said on this podcast.
And
he was. I love my dad. Was great. Anyway, yes, I've been to Nebraska. And Nebraska, we've been to Iowa. And
Iowa's a real place. I've been there.
Yeah, well, Nebraska's like a little further west Iowa. Nah. But it's the same kind of thing.
You say that.
They just set up a huge football stadium in the middle of massive state-sized cornfield and say, this is what we're going to do on Saturdays. Everyone here is going to care about it. And it's I like it. I like Nebraska
I don't
fans.
Think that there's really anything between Iowa and Colorado. I just don't believe it.
It's just more Iowa, really.
I mean,
they just had to states have to be semi-square, and it was getting a little too long, so they just kind of broke it up into two Iowas.
Like, if you actually try to drive into Nebraska, it's just like, welcome to Colorado. That's what happens. Anyway.
I'd rather drive
around. For the ages.
Nebraska.
Fake schools. Real schools that sound fake. All right, we're going to take one more break, come back, and talk about the Smoo Mustangs.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESUREELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to MGR Radio 4.2 live at the Bow Store on Main Street.
This music we're listening to is Ann Arbor Midnights by the Champagne Saints. Kindly offered their music for our uses today.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, because we can't use commercial music anymore. YouTube will like turn the sound off on. Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough. Anyway, the SMU Mustangs come to town. They are coming off a 42-12 defeat against TCU and a similar but slightly more humiliating defeat against the North Texas Mean Green, as you may have.
A real school.
Which is a real school in a real place.
Yeah.
And their real quarterback, who is not Scott Bakula, threw 50 times, completed 40 of those passes for 444 yards against a team that Michigan is about to play. So, yikes.
Yeah. Well, I watched the TCU game because I figured I could learn more from a rainstorm TCU game than that. And, yeah, yikes. This is probably the worst team we're playing this year.
Well, there aren't really many candidates for that. And the thing that I think is probably disappointing for SMU fans is that, you know, Chad Kelly did well enough to get hired by Arkansas in the offseason. They were basically 500 both of the past 2 years. They returned their quarterback. They returned three offensive line starters. They did lose a couple wide receivers. But, you know, they had top 15 S&P offense this year, and they have been horrendous since Sonny Dykes got hired.
Yeah. And Sonny Dykes was supposed to be like the perfect fit because Chet Morris built like an air raid roster, yeah. And
he's an air raid guy.
He's an air raid guy, and
from Texas.
Yeah, they had. So he was supposed to walk in. He had Ben Hicks returning as a quarterback who slung an ungodly amount of yards last year in their and he has looked really terrible this year, and I think that it mostly comes down to they had two really great receivers last year, both who got drafted. One of them was the last guy in the draft. The other was a second rounder. And they got the third banana back, who was the slot receiver, but he's, you know, a guy. And everyone else is not NFL quality. So,
I mean, that isn't just it. SMU's given up 8 sacks already, which is tied for 121st. So they have Michigan-level pass blocking from last year.
My take on their right tackle was they would take any tackle off of Michigan's roster. This guy's a Kansas transfer.
Yikes.
So, yeah, couldn't make it in whatever. I don't know. Does Kansas have cities? Whatever city Kansas is in.
I think there's one called Kansas City.
That's in Missouri.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, the whole Midwest does not make sense. That's why we play football. Anyway, this guy, he's pretty bad, and he's one of the new starters, and the left tackle is fine. Everyone else on the line is pretty bad. The left guard is actually even more of a problem.
Because they're too. The weirdest thing is, like, they, like, average 280 pounds on the roster.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that they list at 300 who they're not really 300. They just get that 6'4", 300 designation you give an offensive lineman because you don't want to say, like, oh, this guy is 6'3", 275.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm basing it off the Bill Connolly preview.
Yeah.
Which probably was a previous year's roster, but, like, these guys were, like, starters last year and they're averaging 280 pounds. It's like, whoa. It's the 1980s offensive line.
Well, 1980s were a good time for SMU, but this is not going to be a good time for SMU. There's not much to talk. I found one guy that I went for danger man was that slot receiver they had last year.
He's not in the slot anymore.
He is. James Proche. They left him there, yeah.
They did.
There's not much more you can do with him. He's listed at 5'11". He's really 5'9".
Yeah, but that's with all the receivers.
Yeah, but they tried to get an air raid guy from West Virginia. There's a lot of transfers on this team, by the way.
Oh.
So the West Virginia guy is Reggie Robertson, and he is not really 6 feet, but he's listed as 6 feet, and he doesn't really have the air raid stuff down, but they're trying it. And I think the air raid when you're...
Wait, isn't that... Holgerson's an air raid guy.
Who is?
Holgerson.
Yeah.
The West Virginia coach.
Holgerson is. They're on slightly different
different...
Yeah.
Stuff, but, you know, as far as a plug-and-play transfer, I would say West Virginia to SMU.
I think that was the idea. I think it's definitely not working yet. But the air raid is a lot of, you know, the quarterback and the receiver have to be on the same page. They're reading the cornerback. They're looking to see how the coverage is playing him. And a lot of times you really only have to make one or two reads, and you're kind of focused on that receiver, and he does what you think he's going to do. And that's not really happening much. So there's a couple balls that just get flung into nowhere where the receiver just didn't make the same cut that the quarterback saw. And in general, I think Hicks is seeing it right and Robertson's not. That was my take on the passes to him. The other receiver is another slot guy that they just kind of have playing out there to be another receiver.
Just a guy?
Yeah, Myron Gayard. Anyway, he's...
Man, we need Ace back.
We do miss you, Ace. Anyway, he was listed at 5'9 on the roster last year. He's listed at 5'11 this year.
I noticed that. I was like going back through his stats, and I was like, how tall is this guy? I was like, let's check to see what he was at as a sophomore. And I was like,
Right. Yeah. So
one of those.
Yep. So he gained a couple inches that don't really show on the football field. And
Seth, we got to talk. We got to talk about using the word phrasing in respect to everything you have said on this podcast.
It's all right. Anyway, can we move on?
Yes,
from that?
Yes, please.
Okay, Braden West is the running back,
the tailback,
and he's another guy I was close to putting a star on, but he's just kind of your average scat backy guy who gets out there and catches a lot of passes too.
Yeah. So I mean, is there anything that you're really looking for from Michigan's defense when they go up against these guys? Like, that might be, like, is there a guy that Michigan could bottle up that would be a nice thing, or is this just
hopeless?
No,
that's like, yeah,
I like Prochet
is gonna shake loose if you give him enough time out there, and like Hicks doesn't really have enough time out there to find him.
All right, other side of the ball, the SMU defense. Well,
you had to tell me to start being nicer in my FIFA films because of this.
I did, because I read them and I feel a little jinxed. Like, I feel like if something terrible were to happen, you would be at fault.
They run the Gerg defense.
So they run a 3-3-5 that they don't know what they're doing in?
They run a 3-3-5 that they don't know what they're doing in. They run a 3-3-5 where they haven't done the middle linebacker lined up at 2 yards much.
Much is doing some work.
They did that. I mean, a couple accidental, I tried to blitz and got caught,
sure,
kind of thing. Yeah. But the real thing is they rush 3 a lot and play deep behind that.
And they have safeties at like 12 yards. They have 2 safeties at 12 yards.
All right. And then they're always backing out. They play...
So they play bend, don't break.
They play bend until you break. They're going to break because...
Okay. this is what I'm saying about being a little nicer.
I mean, how many times can... Like, this is...
You're going out of your way to be like, this is an accepted football term, but I'm going to jerk it up now. So,
no, because bend, don't break brings to mind, like, the old Notre Dame teams, which once you got them in the red zone, they were tougher to pass against and tougher to move the ball against, but they would let you kind of dibble and dabble beneath them. These guys, they're actually bringing the linebackers on any kind of play action. They knocked it off later in the game, but it was that's their response to why we rush 3. But if it looks at all like there's going to be a handoff, we just have the 2 or 3 linebackers attack right away. It creates a lot of space behind them, and then, you know, quite often the safeties will biff their attempts to hold that down to 6 yards, and it becomes 46 yards. I think we're going to play teams that I have a lot of respect for, and this is not one of them.
All right.
What do you want me to say?
I don't know.
They're going to end to be like the 128th defense in S&P.
I want to hear one nice thing about...
Kyran Mitchell is a good player.
He's like a Hudson type.
He's like a Hudson type that they moved to middle linebacker, but, you know, that works.
Okay.
And that's kind of what linebackers are today anyway. And he's very willing to go and stick his nose into an open gap. And he is pretty quick. Not great at zone coverage, but that's like the only hole in his game right now.
All right.
Yeah. And the other linebacker is pretty all right, too. Richard Moore, who's the Texas A&M transfer. Looks like a guy who, you know, was getting buried at Texas A&M, yeah, but had a shot.
Yeah, there's a big difference between, like, we took a Texas A&M transfer and we took a Kansas transfer.
Or the safety, who's an Illinois transfer.
Ooh, oh, no.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
He does play more kind of a hybrid role. He's playing Bandit, you know, that the Kovacs job.
Oh, no, the Bandit spec.
Yeah. Oh, I had to bring out all. I brought Spur, Quick.
These are things that we don't say anymore, even if they're accurate.
And the defensive line, they rotate a lot of guys at nose.
Okay.
There were five guys who legitimately were playing nose.
And when you have five nose tackles, you don't have any?
Yeah. They're all the same guy. One of them's a true freshman, one's a redshirt junior, and everyone else is kind of fitting in between there. And they're all 3'2", or 3'2", 6'2", and 300.
I see.
Yeah. And then the defensive linemen are kind of, the ends are not very attack-ish. They're more kind of defensive tackles.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite thing from doing the preview
is
that, so they've had three games under Dykes, and the passing stats for them are just brutal in two.
Yeah.
And when they played the North Texas Mean Green, they got up to like 252 yards on 24 attempts. That's 10 yards an attempt. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a lot of yards. And the QB rating that ESPN gave him was 1.3. And QBR is out of 100. It's not out of 10. It's out of 100.
So,
because he had like two long touchdowns in the last 2 minutes of a huge blowout.
Yeah.
So, you know, ESPN chucks those away, and then you've got 1.3 out of 100. And that was the good passing outing for I keep wanting to call them Central Methodist. Southern Methodist.
Southern Methodist. They, you know, my sister is a professor there, actually.
At Southern Methodist?
At Southern Methodist, yeah. She teaches evolution to the, the SMU students.
Okay, see, this was, you should have said that in the previous segment, because that's a lie.
Serious.
I know that you're serious.
This is a real job for real people.
There are things that are true that I don't believe.
Yeah.
And you say most of them.
Well.
That's not true. But I think we've said all we have to say about Southern Methodist.
Yeah.
Wait, what are we looking at for the score here?
I mean, I don't like predicting scores that are this mean. I've been mean enough to them. So 25-3.
25?
Yep.
They gave up 450 yards passing to North Texas.
Well, it's because we're going to be passing all game just to practice with those tackles. So kind of a mini spring game here, and the final score is not going to look great. That's what I'm going with. That's not really what I think is going to happen.
25 points, huh?
I don't care. We're going to kill.
People will be in the streets if Michigan scores 25 points against this team. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Who's got it better than us?
No!